China presented its new top leaders to the world on Wednesday, all seven of them men. And that's not just a fluke. One rung down in the ruling 25-member Politburo, there is only one woman. China's founder Mao Zedong once famously said that women hold up half the sky. In the early days, women were drafted into the workforce and politics. But critics say that today, they're losing ground as traditional gender expectations make a comeback, helped on by the Communist Party.
All right, let's talk about this city specifically. First of all, it's called NEOM. What is the point?
The idea is essentially you create another version of Dubai on the Red Sea, and they have these huge incredible plans to build, for example, a bridge across the Red Sea. It'll be very interesting to see how much investment, how much interest they get from China, especially in a world where the US is retrenching. Mm-hmm. You're going to see the Saudis reaching out, especially to the East on this project.
Political ads on the internet have been completely unregulated in the United States, really since the beginning of the internet. Twitter says they're going to launch a new website that's going to have all kinds of information about all advertisers, actually, not just political ones. You'll be able to see all ads currently running on Twitter. You'll be able to see how many times their ads are running. For election ads, you'd be able to see some specific information. And then election ads in the Twitter feed will be labeled as election ads.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's October 26, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. And we're glad you're here again for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day underway. There's lots going on today in Washington, the tax plan, the budget plan up for a vote in Congress. Lots going on this program, too. A little bit later on, the Loop Alliance, Chicago Loop Alliance, will be here talking about the impact of art on not only our culture, but on our economy. And we'll talk with Judy Moore Green, chairman of the Chicago Loop Alliance, a little bit later in the show. And Don Lloyd is here today. He's our thought leader. Our thought leader conversation this morning with Associated Bank focuses on the foreign currency market. Lots to talk about there today as well. Let's begin, though, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Asian shares drifting as Wall Street's retreat from recent record highs and a widely awaited European Central Bank meeting gave investors reason to pause. Japan's benchmark Nikkei index right now on the big board is up about 32 points. It's going to be good for about maybe a tenth of a percent today again. The Hang Seng down almost 100 points. That's good for about a third. The Shanghai Composite is also in positive territory this morning, up about a third, though, up about 10 points. In Europe, markets are generally higher with the FTSE and the DAX and the CAC all up about a third this morning. Futures in this country weak to flat. Dow futures right now off about 2 points. Crude oil is trading up just about 7 cents a barrel, 52.25 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you. That tax budget plan that is crucial to President Trump's tax cuts is set for a close vote in the House of Representatives today after some Republicans vowed some opposition in an effort to protect a popular tax break. Yes, again, it's opposition from the president's own party that could scuttle this. The rebellious faction is resisting a proposal to eliminate a federal deduction for state and local income taxes, which would hit middle-class voters in high states like New York, New Jersey, and California. There's a meeting this morning ahead of that vote on the House floor later on. A couple of other stories. Hyundai Motors says its net income has plunged 20%, continuing its losing streak into nearly a fourth year. South Korea's largest automaker says its July to September net profit was just $852 billion. The maker of Genesis and Sonata has recorded profit losses since late 2013 as its passenger sedans fell out of favor with motorists. There is news from the world of cereal this morning. The Kellogg's company is redoing its Corn Pops cereal boxes after a complaint that art on the back of the box is racially insensitive. The box shows cartoon Corn Pops hanging out in a retail mall. One author complained on Twitter that the cereal box is teaching kids racism because the only brown Corn Pop depicted is working as a janitor scrubbing the floor. It is Thursday. That means it's our Thought Leader Conversation Day, and Don Lloyd is here. He is the SVP and manager of the capital markets at Associated Bank. He looks over the foreign exchange, rate swaps, commodity derivatives, lots to talk about with financials and currency this morning. Don, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Steve, good morning. It's great to be here.
Thought of you when I saw this CNBC article. Lots of talk about whether the dollar may be at risk as the global reserve currency. I remember you telling us again and again, you are the dollar's best cheerleader. What did you think of this story?
Well, there's always talk. It seems to cycle around about every 24 to 36 months about the U.S. dollar being the reserve currency. And do we want that role? Should we take that role on? Do we want to step aside? Why are we the reserve currency? What's going to replace it? And it's something you can't control, first of all. What is a reserve currency? It's just a currency that is a safe haven currency that people are very comfortable, central banks are very comfortable to hold. Now, all central banks hold foreign reserves of some sort, and they do it for a number of reasons. They do it to make payments. They do it to intervene on behalf of their currencies. The question is what is their mix? And the world is comfortable holding dollars at this stage of the game. They have been for decades. They probably will continue to be. And there's talk about, well, will the euro come in as the reserve currency? Will the Chinese yuan be the reserve currency? Maybe, perhaps. I don't think it means one bit of impact to the dollar or to the markets overall as a whole. Hold whatever you're comfortable with. For the foreseeable future, everyone's going to be still wanting to hold dollars in time of crisis. That's going to be the safe currency. It's the markets that are deep enough and big enough and broad enough to handle, you know, any type of capital movements that occur. So the dollar is going to always be in that mix of reserve currencies, in my opinion.
Yeah, and this story sort of suggests it's more of a long-term, it's an outlook that's a long-term outlook. They kind of share your short-term outlook on it. They talk about, too, some of the reasons for it, which you back up, is that, you know, geopolitical concerns, the issues with China and South Korea. The concerning one to me, though, was the loosening of this, what seems like the loosening of the U.S.-European transatlantic alliance, this notion that somehow we're falling back in leadership around the world and the EU might be moving up. Long term, that could be a big issue, couldn't it?
Could be. I wouldn't say it's an unhealthy issue. I mean, you have to remember 100 years ago, you know, who was the predominant power of the globe? It was the United Kingdom, you know, and the British pound sterling was the reserve currency. The British pound sterling was, if not the reserve currency, one of the reserve currencies that was out there. The sun never set on the British Empire. Look what happened there. You know, they basically had their day in the sun. The cycle turned. The U.S. came, you know, through Industrial Revolution and just our growth and what we had with this whole thing called capitalism and democracy. And we became the reserve currency with really no second in there. We will turn as well. And that's not an unhealthy thing. It is a normal thing. It's a natural thing as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I don't get too worked up in what's the reserve currency and what's not the reserve currency. A long time has passed since World War II.
Yeah,
and remember World War II. You know, we were really the only power in the world that did not feel the effects of war with the destruction and whatnot, and we became the bankers of the world. You know, we financed everything from our allies to the Axis powers on their rebuilding and whatnot. And that's why the U.S. dollar became the reserve currency. That was a long time ago. The world has turned now.
So if our positions are, you know, in dollars and we're watching all of this transpire, will it be something that we'll be able to see coming a long way in advance?
If you're paying attention to it, yeah. Probably you'll see the trend. It's one of those, you know, long-term topics that it's going to move very slowly. And you're going to wake up 2 years from now, 5 years from now and say, oh, things have changed. You know, unless you're really paying attention to it, probably not. But I don't think you need to really pay attention to it that closely, to be honest with you.
One of the other global issues, global stories that's been happening over the last month or so is this situation in Spain, where Catalonia wants to, you know, go independent from Spain. It's caused all kinds of consternation in that global market. Is it impacting the rest of the world?
Sure. The eyes of the world are certainly on this. I mean, you look back to 1776 in the U.S., the colonies who wanted their independence and their freedom from tyranny. And look what we started. You know, the Irish did it, you know, and now Spain looks to be doing it. Yeah, you go back to, the Ottoman Empire and the Habsburg Spain, you know, the wars of there. And you had Catalonia, which were a people unto themselves. And even to this day, you know, they have their own language. They have their own government that sits within Spain. For the listeners, you know, Catalonia is sort of in the northeast corner of Spain, up around Barcelona, and you know, Madrid sits more in the middle, and you know, that's the capital of Spain. And you know, the whole idea was they want their independence. They had the referendum vote at the beginning of October, and the referendum vote, much like the UK did with Brexit, was to vote for secession, for an independent state. And the reason why they wanted that was basically a lot of wealth sits in Catalonia. And you know, the Canton region up there, you know, these are the guys that do the human pyramids. If you've ever seen them on, you know, television, they go 8 or 9 people high, and it's just people on top of people on their shoulders. That's the region we're talking. There's a lot of wealth up there, and in fact, they make up about 20% of the GDP of Spain, and they're basically not too thrilled about having this wealthy, productive region. And they're basically taking care of the less fortunate or the less wealthy areas of Spain. And you know, that was the big catalyst of this whole thing. And it seems to be in vogue now to let's go for independence and let's have referendums and listen to what the people want. Problem is that Spain sort of responded to that whole vote by sending police in to create violence so that this vote wouldn't occur. And that's what started the whole thing. And that's where we are. The world's eyes are on this. What does it mean? It's sort of a domino effect. If you pull that 20% out of Spain, what does that mean to the European community? You know, what is that going to mean to the rest of the EC? What happens to the $52 billion of debt that region has? It again sort of raises this whole specter of the dismantling of the EC. If that begins, if that occurs, what is a de-engineering of that? What is going to be the impact to it? Mm-hmm. How is that going to affect the euro? How will that affect the dollar against, or any currency against the euro for that matter? So that's why the eyes of the world are on it right now.
Yeah, and we've even after the vote, and there's nothing really concrete that's happened except for that vote. The country's already talking about their growth falling, the forecast for growth falling.
Sure.
And they haven't even separated.
No, yeah. Right, exactly. Again, it creates chaos.
Right.
I mean, the number of companies that have moved out of the region. I mean, think if that region pulls out of Spain and they become their own. You know, I mean, all of the contracts, all of the laws that have to be changed, you know, the divvying up of the deficit, who's going to pay it, who's responsible for it, let alone the, okay, you know, where's your army? Where's your police? You know, who's going to, you know, protect you from the civil unrest that might occur in your newly formed state? That's just all this uncertainty. And you're seeing local companies out there absolutely pull out to get away from that because they don't want to be caught up in that whole years of figuring out the details, the finer details of this. You know, independence, secession, they're all great ideas, and certainly the world's borders have changed and can continue to change. If you look back, you know, 60 years ago, 50 years ago, you know, the Balkan regions, you know, Russia, look at all the borders and boundaries that have changed. We forget that, you know, the world's a dynamic place. And just because borders are going to could possibly get changed in Europe, that's been going on for 1,000 years and will continue to go on. And, you know, we've got the front row seat to this. So I think it's very interesting. Yeah. I think it's very exciting. I think, again, it's very natural. Usually those types of border changes and secession ideas, which are okay, sound great on paper, but they usually result in conflict and violence to achieve what they want to achieve. Well, we'll see if the people of Canton region are able to stomach anything like that.
Still on the global scene, the International Monetary Fund also upped its forecast for growth in almost all of its developed countries, in the developed countries, but said in its report issued recently that there's still low inflation. And the people who are at the have-nots at the bottom are still struggling to come up to par with those who have.
Sure.
Is that a concerning global forecast, economic forecast?
No, but it is sort of a new event, isn't it? I mean, mm-hmm. you go to school, you pay all this money, you learn about the J curve, you learn about, Phillips curve, Phillips effect and all this, and then it all gets thrown out. The whole idea that economic growth leads to employment and employment leads to wage push and you have inflation. Well, where is it?
It's not happening.
Yeah. So, gosh, what did I just learn and spend all that money, sitting in class for? Because all of a sudden we're into there's a new paradigm, new studies, new PhDs are going to, go out there and write their dissertations on what's happening now. And if you take a look back at what's happening, you're right. The U.S. again is leading the world into this growth area. You've got some countries that are beginning to follow, and they're beginning to follow suit. And the cry that's going up is, where's the inflation? A little inflation is good. It's like that piece of chocolate cake. A little is okay. A lot of chocolate cake isn't. Inflation, a little bit's okay. A lot's not very good. And everybody would like a little bit of inflation, to be honest with you. I think it's healthy. I think it's good. It's not happening. Why? You take a look at the demographics of the globe, not just of the U.S., where you now have an aging population versus those that are coming on board that are more savers as opposed to borrowers. So there's not that demand for money. There's not that demand to push interest rates mm-hmm. up. You have the globalization of world markets. It's much easier now to buy goods from overseas than it was, say, 100 years ago or 50 years ago. You can get a bicycle in China for $40 versus one someplace else for $70 or $80. Free markets like that will create lower demand or lower prices that's going to bleed through. So I think we're in a period where we're going to see economic expansion with low interest rates for a long time. Nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. It's just that we're not used to it. So everything we've sort of learned in our textbooks, it doesn't make sense right now. But isn't that great? Because that's what makes the market even that much more vital and that much more interesting.
It is interesting. It is reassuring that I know that I'm not, I didn't learn the right thing when I see Janet Yellen scratching her head and trying, these economists trying to figure out what's happening and they can't. Are you saying that they will eventually kind of figure this out, or because the last time I saw her, she looked confused still.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, you look at our Federal Reserve, our Federal Reserve employs more economists than any other company, on the face of the planet. I mean, it is nothing but economists. And just think of the work that they're doing, taking a look at this and getting into the science of economics and why things are happening. They'll come up with, they'll do all their work. They're going to come up with their concepts. They're going to prove them and disprove them, and they'll apply appropriate policy going forward. That's the mechanism we have, and it's a good mechanism. I'm encouraged by it. I'm excited by it. I'm even more excited the G10's meeting, first of four meetings they have going on, and the G10 central banks are meeting, which are the first of four meetings they have going on. What I like, especially today versus, back when I was younger, is the sharing of information that you see. No longer do we sit isolated in our countries with our economists working on things and, these guys have it over here and these guys haven't figured it out yet. It's the sharing of information. Which I think goes lockstep with the whole globalization idea. That's good because now we're in a forum where ideas can be exchanged and concepts can be discussed, and I think the world benefits from that as a whole. We're seeing that firsthand going on right now.
And some of that sharing happens in real time. You don't even have to wait a day or two for it.
With the speed at which information gets out now, absolutely.
We're mentioning Janet Yellen there. Should we talk about the possibility of getting a new Federal Reserve chair? What would that mean for the global markets if we did change?
I think it would be whoever gets selected, because the five candidates that Trump is considering that will then go to the Senate for confirmation, I think they're all very good candidates. I think they all will bring continued confidence and stability to the market in the Fed selection that we have and the role that the Fed plays. I think it is an unknown right now, and the market sort of looks at it, but they're not too worried one way or the other about it because the candidates are, maybe some are more hawkish than others, but, they're all focused on the two things that the Fed focuses on, which is price stability and job creation. And the Fed is thinking 18 months ahead, 24 months ahead, like they always do. That's not going to change. I think whoever is nominated and then gets confirmed, it will be just one small little obstacle that is now behind us, and the market can go focus on other things. This is not a major thing, as far as I'm concerned. If you had some different candidates in there that could really create some havoc, maybe it was, but maybe it would be. But I see it as, okay, it's an unknown, not a big deal. Go ahead, select, confirm, let's get on with it, and let's move beyond it.
Halloween a few days away. I hear there's a rumor going around that you're going to have snack-sized Snickers and Bitcoin at Don's house for Halloween. Is that true?
Well, we have those on the trading room all the time. Yes. I mean, you know, it's just
the Bitcoin or the snack-sized Snickers.
Well, certainly the large-sized Snickers. That is sort of a staple with the donuts.
So. Yeah, Don. Good to see you.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll see you next time. Yeah. Don Lloyd, the senior vice president and manager of capital markets at Associated Bank, overseeing foreign exchange, the rate swaps, commodity derivatives. We're going to continue our chat with Don after the bell and post that with the podcast of our broadcast. Later this morning, you can also listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com and at AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. Make sure you follow Associated Bank as well on Twitter at Associated Biz.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:40 now here on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. The Chicago Loop Alliance has commissioned the city's first ever economic impact study of loop arts and cultural institutions, hoping to get a handle on what people like and what impact it's having. This morning, we're happy to have with us the chair of the Chicago Loop Alliance, Judy Moore Green. Judy, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve, and thank you for having me this morning.
So tell us about the study. What will it encompass, and why have you decided to do this?
Well, if you look at Chicago's loop over the last 30 years, it is changed drastically. I know I started my work career in the loop back in the 70s, and you'd be pretty hard-pressed to see much activity after 6 o'clock at night, except for a couple theaters. And I think what's grown up around us, starting with everything from the theater district and the renovation of all the old movie theaters into Broadway houses, to the Goodman moving over to Dearborn, Millennium Park, the Harris Theater, we've found that our district, which is defined on the east by the park, on the north by the river, on the south by Congress, and on the west by the river, is packed with some of the greatest cultural institutions in the world in a very small geographic area. And I don't think it's a story Chicago has told. It needs to be told. It makes us a world-class city and brands us in a completely different way.
And that geographic area includes, the Art Institute, all of the downtown theaters where the Broadway shows are happening. Those are the big ones?
Yes, well, and also the theater I work for, the Auditorium Theater, mm-hmm. there 128 years. The Joffrey Ballet, the Siskel Film Center, the Lyric Opera, the Chicago Symphony. And as we know, when you've seen things like in the press singularly about the Art Institute being one of the number one art museums in the world, or the Chicago Symphony being one of the number one symphonies in the world, the Lyric, it's all singular that you're hearing morsels of this about the culture and the arts in Chicago, but it's never told as a one big story. I mean, every single night you have over 2,000 people, 8 shows a week visiting Hamilton. You know, at the auditorium in the month of December, every single night for 30 nights, you'll see, you know, 3,000, 2,500 people coming to a Nutcracker. Those stories aren't told. And what that's doing, it's feeding business to restaurants, and people are coming in and staying at the local hotels, and they're going to the stores and spending money. And it really is an economic driver and part of the revitalization of our loop.
The study is, it's a visitor survey that's being distributed locally by the Loop Arts and Cultural Organizations, but it's also online at your website. What are some of the questions that you're asking?
Well, we're really asking what they're doing in Chicago. For instance, the date of their visit, sites and venues that they're visiting or what performance they're seeing. They spent money on parking, or if they took public transportation like a cab, an L, if they spent money on food and drink, if they happened to do any retail purchases, hotel night stays, if they spent money on gas coming downtown, the length of their stay, their zip code, their age, their income range, if they have children. So we're really getting the full 360 of who's coming and what they're doing once they come into the Loop boundaries.
One good side note we'll say here, if you go online and take this survey, there's a giveaway for November 15th. You might be able to wear a pair of tickets to the Chicago Architecture Foundation's Holiday Lights Tour on the big bus. So that's kind of cool. And also admission to the Art Institute. So there's a little bit of motivation to go there. I think there's also tickets to a musical there as well. So there's motivation to take the survey. You mentioned earlier that just anecdotally, I think we all see what's happening in the Loop. I remember, too, that what you were talking about when you used to come downtown and there it used to be empty. But now it's bustling. What would you hope to, once you get this snapshot, do with that information specifically?
Well, I think it's going to be used on various fronts. So, for instance, we are a member-based organization. So we also want to serve our members and our stakeholders and downtown businesses. We want them to understand what the impact of these cultural institutions actually have on their business. And we hope what it'll do, it'll promote business development in the Loop. We hope it provides case-making data to the various artistic and cultural organizations. I know personally for the auditorium, it's a great study to show when you're going after corporate sponsorship or trying to attract folks that are going to actually support what you're doing in the arts. And I think it's, you know, part of it, too, we want to reposition Chicago in a much more positive light in what a world-class city we are. I think we'd be hard-pressed to find another city anywhere in the world where the density is so small and it's so high level of the different cultural and arts organizations in that small area. The other thing is I hope we provide great information for tourism and economic development organizations here in Chicago, like Choose Chicago, like World Business Chicago. So, for instance, with this bid for Amazon, this would be a fantastic study to turn over as they're trying to move employees to a city that has something to offer. And this cultural study will provide that, I think, as Chicago's looking to attract headquarters and businesses and employees to its city.
The success that the Loop Alliance has had in all of these different aspects of the theater and culture downtown, it just doesn't happen overnight. What are the ingredients that has led us to this point?
Well, I think we have great leadership in the arts and a lot of very passionate people, and it's high class in every way. And so many of these institutions, I mean, like this Symphony and the Lyric and the Art Institute, the Auditorium, we've been around a long time. And then the Mayor Daley's vision to create a theater district when all those old movie theaters were converted, that created a very vibrant area right off of State Street that, you know, where you wouldn't even dare walk 25 years ago. You know, we also have places like the Goodman creating work that go on to Broadway. You know, Chicago, we have an enormous amount of talent right here in our own city. And I think we've grown that through many of our theaters and dance companies and music companies, but we are definitely world-class. I mean, you can't compare us to anything. We're up there with London, New York, absolutely.
Yeah, and not only that, it must be gratifying, too, to see that it's become a destination. People obviously love coming to Chicago for various things, but I can't tell you how many times I've talked to people who've come specifically for a show or something at one of these cultural institutions from hundreds of miles away. This was their destination. That was their destination event.
Absolutely. I was on a cruise recently, and a lot of the folks were really from all over the world. And I met a couple that said they were traveling Chicago to come to Blues Fest. And people knew so much about our festivals and people know about our cultural institutions. But like I said, as an all-encompassing story of the richness of this. That has not been told. And I think people will be really surprised when we get that data and we release that, hopefully in April. We're working towards that now with all the, you know, customer surveys happening right now. So I think it's a great story, and I'm glad that the Loop took the Loop Alliance took the leadership to do this. I think, you know, we did a similar type of study with academics and universities and found that we were one of the largest college campuses in the country with right now close to 56,000 students. And, you know, things happened in the Loop for that. I'm sure the conversion of Carson Perry Scott to Target had a lot to do with that. If you look at the products that are in that store, it's totally targeted to college students. You look at some of the retail that went in on State Street, targeted to students. They brought a lot of life to the street. And I think this study is going to really, again, help the economic development of the Loop, which I think is on a trajectory like it has never been. It's clean. It's beautiful. It's lively. It's alive. And you know, that's our mission. We want to create, manage, and promote a high-performing urban experience to attract people and attract investment to the Loop.
Well, Judy, best of luck with the survey, and we'll keep promoting as much as we can so we can get you some more responses to those surveys. And thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Steve. All right. It was nice to talk to you.
Okay. Judy Moore Green is the chair of the Chicago Loop Alliance. You can find more about all of this at loopchicago.com. You can take that survey that we were talking about right there. A couple of drawings monthly, really, November 15th, December 15th, and January 15th for winners who could win tickets to a Broadway show and to the Art Institute and even the Holiday Lights bus tour. So go take that survey. The Loop Alliance wants to hear from you.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures pointing up about 10 points. Everything else is generally flat on the markets. Some developing news on the Spanish story we were talking with Don about earlier in the broadcast. Spanish stocks are higher this morning, gaining on media reports that the Catalan president will dissolve the region's parliament and call early elections. Let's get you the latest now on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The opening session of the National FFA Convention in Indianapolis got underway with a packed house last night, as the national officers open session one, and the convention will go through Saturday afternoon when they elect the new national officer team. But there was a surprise at last night's opening session. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue made a surprise appearance and delivered an inspiring message that was well received by the packed field house here at the Bankers Life in Indianapolis. Secretary of Agriculture Perdue once again promised he would continue to work with the FFA and other young farmers because he said the average age of farmers in this country getting too high, and we need to encourage young people to move into agricultural careers and emphasize agricultural production. His message warmly received because he's kind of a grandfatherly type to these younger people, and he was inspirational in what he had to say. Today, we continue with day number two of the National Convention, and we'll be spending the day here with these blue-jacketed FFA members, about 64,000 in Indianapolis at the moment. I'll have a great day. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Thursday, October 26th, the Labor Department reports today on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. National Association of Realtors releases its September report on pending home sales, which are seen as a barometer of future purchases. Freddie Mac also reports on weekly mortgage rates. Lots of earnings today, including American Airlines, Southwest Airlines, Comcast, Ford, Union Pacific, United Parcel Service, Twitter, Microsoft, Amazon, and Alphabet, all reporting quarterly earnings today.